The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're tackling a really big one, communism, an idea that, well, truly shaped the 20th century in profound ways.
Absolutely. Inspiring millions, but also leading to immense suffering.
Exactly. And to help us navigate this complex history, we're relying on the work of political scientist Leslie Holmes, particularly his book Theory, Practice, and Failure.
It's such a vital topic because Holmes helps us cut through the noise. You know, he focuses on dissecting the history, the structures.
So what's our core mission today for you, the listener?
I think it's about understanding this huge, essential contradiction. How did an ideology that promised total liberation, equality, even the end of the state itself,
the state just withering away.
Right. How did that lead to some of the most powerful, centralized, and frankly, oppressive states we've ever seen? That's the puzzle.
That gap, that chasm between the utopian dream and the authoritarian reality, that's what Holmes really zeroes in on. So we're aiming for balance here, using evidence, trying to understand rather than just praise or condemn. Okay, so who is Leslie Holmes? Let's get a sense of our guide here.
Well, he's a highly respected political scientist, professor emeritus at the University of Melbourne. And his background makes him particularly suited for this.
How so?
He's got the serious academic credentials, a PhD from the London School of Economics, so the theoretical grounding is definitely there.
Okay.
But crucially, he didn't just stay in the library. He combined that theory with a lot of field work. He spent time researching in former communist countries, Russia, Poland, East Germany.
But that must give him a completely different perspective actually being there.
It really does. And, you know, a lot of his work focuses on post-communist systems, what happened after the collapse.
Ah, so he's looking back with the benefit of hindsight, analyzing the failure itself.
Exactly. He gets into the causes, the consequences, the sort of institutional decay that maybe wasn't obvious from the outside when these states look so solid. He really bridges that gap between the big ideas and what actually happened on the ground. So the core idea running through all of Holmes's analysis, the central thread, if you like, is this fundamental, maybe even unavoidable gap between communist theory and communist practice.
Everything stems from that divide, which means we need to be super clear about what we mean by communism, right?
It's absolutely critical. Holmes makes this really helpful distinction up front.
Okay, lay it out for us.
On one hand, you have small c communism. This is the original abstract ideal from Marx. Think stateless, classless, no money, perfect equality. A real utopia, you know?
A philosophical endpoint.
Pure theory.
Pure theory. Then on the other hand, there's big C communism. This is the actual political movement, the state systems that existed in the 20th century. Soviet Union, China under Mao, Eastern Europe.
Defined by things like the all-powerful state, the single-party rule, the planned economy. Precisely. The concrete reality. And Holmes traces how we got from Marx's critique of inequality to Lenin's revolutionary strategy. That adaptation, that Leninist blueprint for taking and holding state power, that's the key pivot point.
And Holmes argues the failure wasn't just bad luck or bad leaders, but was actually baked into that Leninist model itself.
That's his core argument. The seeds of the failure, the authoritarianism, the inefficiency, they were sown right there in how Lenin adapted Marx to the Russian context.
Okay, let's unpack that. We should probably start with Marx briefly, his core ideas.
Right, so Holmes points to historical materialism first. The idea that history isn't about great men or grand ideas primarily, but about economics, how society organizes production, that's the base.
And this economic base creates
class struggle, the constant conflict between those who own the means of production, the bourgeoisie, and those who only have their labor to sell the proletariat.
And Marx thought this struggle would inevitably lead to revolution, right? Especially in advanced capitalist countries.
Yes, he predicted capitalism's internal contradictions would doom it. And he expected this revolution in places like, say, Britain or Germany, the industrial powerhouses.
But it didn't happen there first. It happened in Russia, which was largely agrarian, not very industrialized.
Exactly. And this is where Lenin comes in, and what Holmes calls the Leninist deviation. This is probably the single most critical concept to grasp. Lenin had to fundamentally change Marx's theory to make revolution possible in Russia.
What was the first big change?
The Vanguard Party. This was a huge departure. Marx thought the working class would sort of naturally become revolutionary through experience.
Right.
Lenin looked at Russia and said, essentially, no, the proletariat here is too small, too disorganized, not politically conscious enough.
So they needed leadership.
Exactly. They needed to be led by a small, tightly organized, highly disciplined group of professional revolutionaries. The party. The vanguard.
Wow. So the agent of history shifts from the entire working class to this tiny, self-selected elite.
Precisely. The party claims to act in the name of the class. But the power is immediately concentrated.
And the way this party was structured internally, democratic centralism, that phrase alone sounds like an oxymoron. How did the centralism part always seem to win out?
Well, the democratic part, in theory, was about allowing discussion before a decision was made by the party leadership, the central committee.
Okay, sounds reasonable so far.
But the centralism part demanded absolute unity of action once that decision was made. No dissent, no questioning allowed after the fact.
So in practice?
In practice, the central control was everything. It created this incredibly rigid top-down structure. Power flowed only downwards from the leadership. It basically eliminated any real internal debate or ability to change course. Holmes calls it the DNA of all future communist states.
And once you have that DNA, the political structures that grew out of it seem almost inevitable, like the one-party state?
Immediately. The party didn't just influence the government. It merged with it. It controlled everything, every lever of power. No opposition allowed, period.
And this system, designed to abolish classes, ironically created a new one almost instantly. The nomenklatura.
Yes, the nomenklatura. This was the new ruling class. Elite party officials who got special privileges, better apartments, access to special shops, cars, schools for their kids.
How on earth did they justify that ideologically? It completely contradicts the promise of equality.
The justification was usually thin, something about needing these perks for efficient administration.
Mm.
But really, it just became an entrenched elite, often passing privileges down. It was a new hierarchy, replacing the old capitalist one.
So politically, it's total control and a new elite. What about the economy, the command economy?
That was the other pillar. Private property and market forces were eliminated. Instead, the state, through central planning agencies, dictated everything.
The famous five-year plans.
Those were the tools, setting targets for every sector, every factory.
And the results. We hear about shortages, inefficiency.
Massive inefficiency. The plans were driven by political goals, build heavy industry fast, boost military power. They were incredibly clumsy at allocating resources for everyday needs.
So they could build giant steel mills but couldn't get bread to the workers consistently?
That's a pretty good summary, yeah. Chronic shortages of basic consumer goods were a constant feature. Plus, without competition or market signals, innovation just stagnated. The system fell further and further behind technologically.
And this internal rot, the economic stagnation, the lack of legitimacy, that sets the stage for the collapse in the late 80s and early 90s.
By the 1980s, the Soviet system especially was running on fumes. It's held together by inertia, coercion, and, well, a population that didn't see alternatives. The official ideology felt hollow to most people.
And then comes Gorbachev.
Yes, Mikhail Gorbachev. Ironically, he was a reformer who wanted to save communism, to revitalize it. He introduced glasnost openness, allowing more discussion and perestroika economic restructuring.
But instead of fixing it, these reforms kind of ripped the lid off.
That's exactly what Holmes argues. The system was too brittle, too rigid to be reformed. Glasnost let people voice decades of pent-up grievances about shortages, corruption, past crimes. It unleashed nationalism. Perestroika just highlighted how broken the economy was.
So Gorbachev didn't cause the collapse. He just revealed it was inevitable.
He accelerated it. His attempts at reform inadvertently demonstrated that the system was fundamentally unfixable, already in terminal decline.
Okay, let's pull back a bit. Thinking about Holmes' overall analysis, what are the main reasons he gives for why the whole system failed so comprehensively? The key takeaways.
I think the first big one is what you might call the impossibility of socialist means. Remember the Vanguard Party, the need for total control during the transition.
Right, the temporary dictatorship that was supposed to wither away.
Well, Holmes argues that concentrating that much power, even for supposedly good ends, creates its own logic. Those in power have every incentive to keep that power. The means radical state control fundamentally undermine the end, a stateless, classless society. The tool becomes the new master.
The instrument of liberation becomes the instrument of oppression, a classic paradox of power.
Exactly. The second major theme is about the economic versus social trade-offs. We do have to be fair and acknowledge, as Holmes does, that these systems often achieved significant social goals, especially early on.
Like what?
Things like dramatically increased literacy, universal access to basic healthcare, education, rapid industrialization in very backward countries. They did reduce certain kinds of inequality.
But at a massive cost.
At the cost of long-term economic viability, efficiency, technological progress, and of course, individual freedom and political liberty. The command economy, as we discussed, just couldn't work in the long run for a complex society. No market signals, no real innovation.
So short-term social gains traded for a long-term systemic failure.
In essence, yes.
Yes.
And that leads to the third theme, which is highly relevant today. The mutation of the idea, particularly with the China model.
Ah, yes. Because the fall of the Soviet Union wasn't the end of communism as a state form.
It's not at all. China presents this fascinating, maybe deeply troubling paradox. It has embraced market economics, state-directed capitalism, really, with incredible dynamism.
But politically?
Politically, it has doubled down on Leninist control. The absolute monopoly of the Communist Party, suppression of dissent, surveillance, it completely challenges that old Cold War idea that economic freedom automatically leads to political freedom.
It's like Leninist politics bolted onto a capitalist economic engine.
A very potent and historically novel combination. It forces us to really question what communist even means in the 21st century.
Holmes really has a way of crystallizing these complex ideas. Are there any particular quotes or core statements from his work that stand out?
Oh, definitely. His writing is full of these really concise, powerful summaries. One that captures that central contradiction we started with is,
oh, on.
Communist parties promise to wither away the state while simultaneously constructing the most powerful states in human history.
That just nails it, doesn't it? The means destroying the ends.
Perfectly. And on the economy, his assessment is blunt but fair. Markets may be imperfect coordinators of economic activity, but central planning has proven to be impossible coordinators of economic activity.
Acknowledges flaws on both sides, but delivers a clear verdict on the practical outcome.
Right. And perhaps the most thought-provoking one gets to the human tragedy of it all. The tragedy of communism lies not in its evil intentions, but in the impossibility of its good intentions.
Wow, that shifts the focus, doesn't it? It suggests the problem wasn't necessarily that the goals were evil, but that the methods required to achieve those utopian goals were inherently self-defeating and often monstrous.
Precisely. It moves the analysis beyond just blaming bad actors towards understanding the deep structural flaws in the ideology as it was practiced.
So how can you, our listener, apply this historical analysis today? What's the real-life relevance?
Well, one direct application is in analyzing authoritarian systems generally. Holmes gives you a toolkit by showing how communist parties used ideology to justify power, how they built personality cults, how the one-party structure worked, how they silenced dissent. These are tactics used by authoritarian regimes of various stripes, not just communist ones.
So understanding the Leninist model helps you spot similar patterns elsewhere, regardless of the label.
Exactly. Recognizing that insistence on total control, the demonization of opponents, the control of information, Holmes's analysis provides a warning system.
And beyond specific regimes, maybe there's a broader lesson about political promises.
I think so. A crucial takeaway is a warning against utopianism, or at least a certain kind of utopianism.
Meaning,
be deeply skeptical of any political project that promises a perfect society, a total solution to all problems, especially if achieving that utopia requires concentrating immense power in the hands of the state or a single party and suspending basic liberties, even temporarily.
Because history, as shown by Holmes, suggests that temporary tends to become permanent and the power corrupts.
Good intentions aren't enough. The structure matters. The means matter.
Thinking back on our discussion, what really struck me was that insight about Gorbachev, that his reforms didn't break the system. They just revealed how broken it already was.
Yeah.
It really reframes his role in history.
It does. It underscores the internal contradictions that had been building for decades. For me, perhaps the most valuable lesson from Holmes is the importance of maintaining that analytical clarity he exemplifies.
Stepping back from taking sides.
Yes. Acknowledging the failures, the horrors, without dismissing the genuine desire for justice and equality that often motivated people initially. The state socialist experiment, the Big C communism, failed disastrously. But the questions Marx originally raised about inequality, about exploitation, or the nature of power under capitalism, those questions haven't gone away. They're still incredibly relevant for our debates today, even if the 20th century answers prove so tragically wrong.
The powerful reminder to separate the critique from the failed prescription. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.